afternoon, Toronto. I'm Sydney Brazil.
And I'm Vanessa Rogers. Welcome to the 306.
On today's show, we will be discussing the Super Tuesday, the coronavirus, the Wet'suwet'en pipeline conflict, and more.
Also, listen for a special on the pianos of Ryerson. Voting is underway in Super Tuesday states. 14 states, American Samoa, and Democrats abroad will be holding their contests today. They'll be awarding 13 to 57 delegates, or 34% of the total available. The two main candidates are former Vice President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Other candidates in the race are Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
More on Super Tuesday. Two Democratic candidates have dropped out of the U.S. presidential race ahead of today. Both Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar dropped out of the race before today's primaries, taking place in 14 different states. Both candidates endorsed Joe Biden as the Democratic nomination after dropping out. At a rally in Dallas, Klobuchar says, quote, "I cannot think of a better way to end my campaign than joining Biden's."
In local news, there have been 5 more confirmed cases of the coronavirus found in Toronto. That brings the total of infections across Canada to at least 20. Here is Chantelle Cruzat-Wervin with the story.
Ontario's chief medical officer, Dr. David Williams, says the 5 new cases are travel-related. Ryerson University has put out a statement saying that they are continuing to monitor the new coronavirus. Here's the receptionist at Ryerson's health clinic.
On their main page, it will say on the top, like, for example, like, snow closure, they will say on their website, too, on the main page.
There has also been a conversation about the Asian community in Toronto facing xenophobia. The coronavirus originated in Wuhan, China. Richard is a Filipino student at Ryerson. He's experienced racism.
When I'm out of breath, I usually, like, I kind of cough a bit because, like, I'm trying to catch my breath. And I remember, like, the woman who was, like, right beside me when I did that, like, was looking at me for a bit, and then she walked from, like, the other side of the train.
Public transit seems to be the most popular place for COVID-19-related xenophobia. For RSJ Radio, I'm Chantal Cruzat-Wervin.
Thanks, Chantal. In sports, the Olympic Games in Tokyo are still set to start on time on July 24th, despite a COVID-19 outbreak in Japan. But Japan's Olympic minister, Seiko Hashimoto, says they could be rescheduled for later in the year. Hashimoto says that Tokyo's Olympic contract states that the Games can be held at any point in 2020.
At home, Canadian public health authorities have the alert level for Iran to level 3. They are advising against all non-essential travel to Iran. This comes after a handful of travelers from Iran have contracted the new coronavirus. This alert level is the same as the one for Hubei, the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak. Iran has 23 politicians who have been infected with the coronavirus.
Government ministers and Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs came to a tentative agreement yesterday. This comes after resistance to the Coastal GasLink pipeline that will run through Wet'suwet'en territory. The agreement acknowledges Indigenous land rights, but not the pipeline. Manuela Vega has the story.
An RCMP invasion on Wet'suwet'en territory has prompted resistance across Canada. This land is unceded, meaning it is not owned by the Canadian government. A land rights agreement between ministers and Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs has not yet been released. Chiefs are waiting to hear from the Wet'suwet'en people before giving approval. Michael Etherington is an Indigenous consultant. He says it's necessary for Indigenous people to make decisions about their own land.
When they make reference to autonomy and self-determination of Indigenous nations to go through their own decision-making process, and so what's happening right now is that within the territory itself, there still has to be ongoing dialogue to establish resolution or consensus on what's been ongoing.
Catherine Tate is a non-Indigenous organizer with Climate Justice Toronto.
The media hasn't been doing a good enough job of explaining the nation-to-nation relationship that exists in Wet'suwet'en law and that exists in Canadian law. So the RCMP invasion is actually breaking both Canadian and Wet'suwet'en law, in addition to other human rights laws.
Coastal GasLink has resumed construction of the pipeline. For RSJ Radio, I'm Manuela Vega.
Thanks, Manuela. At Ryerson, students are asked to cast 2 votes this week. One is for the Board of Governors election, the other is for students. As Abby Kelly, these votes have confused students.
Send us emails and, like they already do, but, like, maybe, like, take videos of, like, the candidates and like explain what they like, why they want to win and what they would do with it.
That's Mia Carnaval, a first-year business management student. She's giving her own ideas of how to get students engaged in voting. Posters around campus advertise platforms for those running for Board of Governors. Others advertise what a new political student union structure might look like. Matthew Wright is a fourth-year Arts and Contemporary Studies student who is running for the Board of Governors.
So there is a bit of confusion about what the Board of Governors is. It's disconnected from the RSU entirely. It's an independent body of students and faculty and staff that govern Ryerson's finances. So really there's a split between the RSU and the Board of Governors that doesn't really connect. So that it doesn't, thankfully, not so much, yeah.
The Board of Governors election takes place between March 2nd and 5th. Voting is available online for staff, faculty, and students on the My Ryerson website. There may be more confusion as to how the new proposed government may differ from the RSU. Leanne Newman is the process manager for the Student Government Process Committee.
So some of the structures were sort of completely different than what's existed. A few of the structures are very similar to the RSU, but are enhanced a little bit more, focusing a bit more on equity, diversity, and inclusion, as well as financial transparency.
The vote for the new student government structure happens tomorrow and Thursday through a link sent to Ryerson email addresses. Alternatively, there is in-person voting in the RCC lobby and the second floor of the SLC. No one from the RSU was able to comment for legal reasons. For RSJ Radio, I'm Abby Kelly.
A powerful storm system produced at least two tornadoes that struck central Tennessee early this morning that left at least 19 people dead. Crews have spent hours pulling survivors and bodies from the wreckage near downtown Nashville. National Weather Service Nashville lead forecaster Sam Schamberger posted a video of the tornado passing north of his building. The storm reportedly stayed on the ground into Hemmerichage near downtown Nashville. And in entertainment, courtroom reality TV show Judge Judy is coming to an end after 25 seasons. Host Judy Scheinlin announced it on an appearance on The Ellen DeGeneres Show. She says the show's upcoming season would be its last on CBS, but her fans are in luck.
I've had a 25-year-long marriage with CBS, and it's been successful. Next year will be our 25th season, silver anniversary. And CBS, I think, sort of felt they wanted to optimally utilize the repeats of my program because now they have 25 years of reruns, but I'm not tired. So Judy Justice will be coming out.
In 2018, Forbes named Judge Judy the year's highest-paid TV host after she sold the rights to her show's library to CBS for an estimated $100 million.
Those are the sounds of penguins chirping in Antarctica. The United Nations commemorates World Wildlife Day every year on March 3rd.
In business news, global stock prices continue to decline because of COVID-19. Analysts believe the Central Bank of Canada is planning to mirror the U.S. Federal Reserve and is dropping the lending rate by 25 basis points. Harrison Faulkner has more.
The COVID-19 outbreak continues to put pressure on global stock prices, as last week the Dow Jones fell 3,600 points. Central banks have raced to correct the markets by announcing plans to cut lending rates. The announcement from the U.S. Fed rallied markets on Monday, but the instability has returned today. Herman Paputo is an associate professor of economics at Ryerson University. He says rate cuts are a defensive move against market uncertainty.
So you should think of this approach maybe as a sort of a first step, and then we'll take it from there, you know? So in principle, this could lead to further reductions in interest rates and more active monetary and fiscal policy, or not, depending on how bad things turn out to be.
Justin Kuhn is a third-year entrepreneurship student at Ryerson University. He sees local industry continuing to operate as normal while fears continue to rise.
People are still going out day to day. They're still shopping. They're still going to the gyms. They're still going to schools. I think if it continues to become a bigger problem and people aren't going out grocery shopping every day, aren't going to the gym, they can't go to school, I think, you know, obviously purchasing power is going to go down because nobody's going outside.
Currently, the Dow Jones is down 474 points. For RSJ Radio, I'm Harrison Faulkner.
Ryerson community members might have grown up playing the piano, but they may not be able to play now because of their living situation. However, they should consider playing the pianos of Ryerson. Feature reporter Jonathan Bradley has the story.
Kerr Hall South at Ryerson University is near Island around 8 p.m. You might hear a few people talking, you might hear some footsteps, and then you hear it. The faint noise of a piano playing. If you keep walking towards it, the volume increases. Soon, you will arrive at Kerr Hall South 239. KHS 239 is one of a few rooms at Ryerson with a piano in them. People are allowed to play these pianos after classes end. How these pianos came to Ryerson is unknown, but they were donated. The music section of the Department of Philosophy manages them. Touched by the hands of decades of Ryerson community members, these pianos have been around for years. Second year architectural sciences student Matthew Martire loves to practice the piano in KHS 239.
I was on medical leave because I got diagnosed with ADHD, so it just helps me de-stress and use my brain for something while I'm figuring out my medical situation.
Martire plays Minuet Waltz by Chopin and Grand Valse Brillante by Chopin on the piano. Martire says that he cannot afford a piano, so this one enables him to practice. While playing the pianos at Ryerson are fun, Martire says some of them are poor quality.
To be honest, the pianos at Ryerson aren't the greatest quality. They always hide them, or they say they're open, but they're not really. And they don't fix them, they don't repair them. So that is annoying. But at least I get a chance to practice.
The piano in KHS 239 has dampers that make a bizarre vibrating noise. One of the pianos in KHS 251 is out of tune. Another piano can be found in Podium Building 367. Third-year mechanical engineering student Nathan Uimana learned to play the piano at the one in Pod 367. The first time Uimana played the piano, he remembers feeling happy.
It was interesting because it wasn't often at that point that I've used, you know, pianos, especially since I didn't really start playing until like a few months ago. So it was fun. It was definitely fun, you know.
Uimana has a practice book that he uses to learn songs. Mechanical engineering is a stressful program, so this piano allows him to take time away from it.
Well, it's definitely a moment of solitude. I guess it's some time away from, you know, the lectures and the classes and the projects and the math. So, you know, I guess that time alone kind of gives me like some sort of peace of mind.
University of Toronto music professor Amy Clementes Cortez says that playing piano can improve students' mental health.
You know, learning a musical instrument helps develop new pathways in the brain, so it has implications for neuroplasticity. And certainly engaging in actively playing music can help increase mood, it can help lower stress.
Students who are interested in playing the piano can head over to the one at Oakham House. However, this piano is not as accessible as the other ones. That is because the Oakham House Choir uses a piano for their choir practices. Oakham House Choir music director Matthew Yeskovich says that this piano is unideal.
It could be a good piano, but it's totally neglected. No one fixes it, no one tunes it, and things are broken, never fixed.
Yeskovich says the lid of a piano has been broken for 15 years. All that was done was a sign was posted about the broken lid. Yeskovich says it is disappointing that management has ignored fixing the piano.
That means that people just don't care about music here. And they don't give the students a chance.
Ryerson community members cannot find out when classrooms with pianos are unlocked and unoccupied. Regardless, Ryerson community members use these pianos when they can to practice and de-stress. For RSJ Radio, I'm Jonathan Bradley.
In entertainment news, pop star Lil Uzi Vert just sampled the Backstreet Boys for his new single, That Way, off his upcoming record, Eternal A Take. The lines have blurred more than ever in the internet age of music, where younger listeners are open to artists who challenge the norms of hip-hop. Will Lofsky has the story.
Gender norms have limited male artists out of fear of coming across as weak for decades. Drew York is a Toronto-based podcaster. He says Biggie Smalls was self-conscious about his hit record Juicy before he saw the reaction to it in the studio.
He noticed that in the studio, like, all the girls that were there were loving the song. They were playing the sample and like the beat over and over again. And it's always been this, like, two schools of thought of, like, yeah, you can make hard records in rap, but, you know, some of, like, the most catchy or some of the most pop influenced stuff is going to be the most commercially successful.
Although rap has become the biggest genre in the world, not all older experts enjoy its new direction. Jason Dickinson is a former recording engineer for rock and country groups in the late 90s. He misses old school hip hop like N.W.A.
It's still amazing. Like, I put that record on now. Was it Straight Outta Compton? It's like, whoa, it's authentic. And what I find with the new stuff, it's lost all its authenticity. And they're just, I don't know, it's music by numbers to me now.
As rap continues to evolve, so too will its listeners. Uzi's Eternal A Take is set to drop in 2 weeks. For RSJ Radio, I'm Will Lofsky.
Thanks, Will. More in music, Puerto Rican artist Bad Bunny has debuted his new album while wearing a shirt to show solidarity with transgender people. Isabella Lopez has the story.
Bad Bunny wore a shirt that called out news organizations for misgendering a murdered trans woman. The shirt reads in Spanish, "They killed Alexa, not a man in a skirt." This was in reference to the murder of 27-year-old Alexa Negron Luciano, a homeless trans woman who was gunned down in front of a car in Puerto Rico. A video of her murder was posted to social media after she was publicly harassed. News organizations misgendered her and used her dead name when reporting the incident. RTA student and Bad Bunny fan Juan Capote thinks Bad Bunny is trying to bring on change.
He's kind of like bringing these issues like to the forefront, not necessarily in his music, which is a point that I would criticize him on, but like more so in his like visuals and like the way he presents himself, which is cool because like he's like bringing messages that are important to change.
Jennifer Martinez is a Ryerson Theater student. She says Bad Bunny has always gone against the norm of macho men in Latin music.
It's not common for Latin culture. There are not a lot of people who are doing that kind of thing. It's just so against the norm. This man does his nails, and that is so, like, it baffles people.
Bad Bunny often receives criticism for not conforming to the social norms in reggaeton music, but to some, he is sparking change. For RSJ Radio, I'm Isabella Lopez.
Breaking news update, the city of Vaughan held its International Women's Day event today. This event celebrates and highlights the importance of women in the workplace and the rise of female entrepreneurship. Reporter Madeline Fiore attended the event.
Thank you. Taking place today at the City of Vaughan was their 7th annual International Women's Day celebration. This year's theme was Each for Equal, which stands for equality and realizing women's rights. There were roughly around 150 people in attendance and 4 guest speakers, including myself, Mara Cataldi, who is the Italian Contemporary Film Festival director, Zulie Matalana, who is the founder and CEO of Tiara Bliss, Inc., and Karen Max, the co-founder and CEO of DK Studios. Overall, this event captured the importance of women in the role in entrepreneurship and was a great way to raise awareness for International Women's Day coming up on March 8th. A few other events coming up in celebration is the CBC International Women's Day celebration, which will be at the Canadian Broadcasting Center on March 5th, and International Women's Day celebration taking place at Toronto City Hall on Sunday, March 8th from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. You can get tickets and more information for both events on Eventbrite. Back to you.
Thanks, Madeline. Now with a look at sports, here's Aya Barati.
Ryerson University, together with Global Experiential Sport Lab and She's for Sports, will be hosting an event next Wednesday to celebrate International Women's Day. The event will focus on women in sports and tech and the issue of gender discrimination and minimal funding for women's sports. The event will give a voice to those making a difference in gender diversity in the sports industry. In other Ryerson news, Ontario University Athletics announced yesterday the women's volleyball team has 3 major award winners and 6 total all-stars after another stellar season. Among the major award winners is Kaylin Wark, who was named the OUA East Division's Player of the Year. The Toronto Maple Leafs received good news yesterday as they look to extend their winning streak. Injured defensemen Morgan Riley and Cody Ceci are expected back next week. The Leafs play the San Jose Sharks tonight at 10:30. The Raptors are looking to end their 3-game losing streak tonight against the Phoenix Suns. With Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol out due to injuries, the team has struggled in its recent losses to Denver and Charlotte. That was your sports update. For RSJ Radio, I'm Aya Barati.
More on sports, Sportsnet will be celebrating International Women's Day on Sunday evening with an all-female NHL broadcast. Leah Hextall and Cassie Campbell-Pascal are set to call the game between the Vegas Golden Knights and Calgary Flames. There will also be women in the executive producer, game producer, and director roles for the day.
And now for our final story of the afternoon. Eating disorders are serious mental illnesses that impact many people around the world. It's believed more than 8 million people suffer from these illnesses globally. Here's Nikki Hashiman with the story.
Our society holds women to a beauty standard that is simply unattainable. Magazines and social media show how beautiful women should look using retouched images of extremely thin women. That has led people to develop unhealthy mindsets on how a person should look for decades. 3-5% of women aged 18 to 45 will experience a serious eating disorder in their lifetime, and the numbers are rising, according to the Ontario government. At just 20 years old, Stephanie Lynn Ross says she has struggled with an eating disorder for as long as she can remember. She tried to obtain a certain type of body that wasn't healthy, and it led her down a dangerous path.
I can at least say for sure that like the first time I remember probably noticing signs of it would be when I first started school, so probably when I was 4 years old. Which is kind of insane when you really think about it. 4-year-old having issues with her body image, that's kind of insane. When you go into school, it's kind of your first time being surrounded by other children your age who are supposed to be the same height as you and the same weight as you. Everyone else is the same height and weight as each other. But I was taller and I was chubbier than every single kid there. It was clear to see that I was different. And it was clear for me to see, and it was clear for the other kids to see. And it was easy for them to make small comments here and there that definitely would eventually get to my head. By the time I was in grade 7, I was eating an apple a day and a carton of chocolate milk. And that was my diet for the whole week. Pretty much skin and bone at that point. And my doctor said to my mom, if she doesn't stop going down this road, like, I don't know what we're going to do. Like, we're going to lose her. You have to make sure she's eating. But that was kind of a turning point. It was when I kind of started to gain weight back. Because I felt like I was actually skinny and I was like, okay, I can eat again, stuff like that. But the weight came back on, and it came back on quickly. I eventually just developed what's called a binge disorder. I felt very powerless at that time in my life, and I felt very disappointed in myself, very guilty all the time.
Dr. Blake Woodside has been treating patients with eating disorders since 1986. He says that women with anorexia are actively discriminated against in our society.
They're told that they don't have a real illness, that it's just a lifestyle choice, despite the 20% mortality rate, and that they're just silly little girls who should just, like, smarten up and eat. Their families are told that they caused it, which would be totally unacceptable if it was cancer, for example. Nobody would say that someone's mother caused cancer. And it's a silly notion that people's parents cause anorexia nervosa. If they get past those hurdles, they get to their family doctor, who has had 0 hours of training in eating disorders in medical school or in their family practice training, and is unable to diagnose or identify the eating disorder. If they actually find somebody, a family doctor who's able to diagnose a disorder, then they discover that the nearest treatment center is 3 hours away, and there's a 6-month waiting list to be assessed, let alone get into treatment. So these are multiple levels of discrimination that people with eating disorders experience.
Woodside says that there is an urgent need to develop new treatment for anorexia in Canada.
I've been to far too many funerals over the last 30 years of women ranging in age from 25 to 55 who died as a consequence of their eating disorder. These are very serious medical conditions. Anorexia nervosa is probably the most lethal psychiatric condition, and it kills young women dead. And I think it's a worthwhile endeavor to try and help people get better from such a serious medical condition.
The three main eating disorders are anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating disorder. For people who have an eating disorder, it's a constant battle to get the right treatment and support. There are very few facilities accessible to the public. The waiting list to enter are very long. Sheena's Place is a charity located in Toronto that offers support for anyone with an eating disorder. It was one of the first resources for eating disorders in Canada. Debbie Berlin is the executive director. She has been a part of the community since the doors opened in 1997.
At Sheena's Place, we're a completely non-medical model. So we don't call people patients. Our people are our service users or our community members. All of our services are free. You do not need a diagnosis. You do not need a doctor's referral. You will get a call back within 48 hours of contacting Sheena's Place. We have many groups that are open so that on an ongoing basis, people can come for support at any time. We have people attending our groups who are young adults, and then we have people here who are in their 50s and 60s.
In the late 1990s, pro-anorexia websites surfaced encouraging girls to starve themselves. The websites consist of tips on dieting, quizzes, music, and poetry on anorexia, competitions on dieting, and photos of thin models known as Thinspiration. Debbie says that Sheena's Place works with other organizations to educate young girls on these dangerous websites.
I don't think it's the cause. I think it's a huge media and social media influence. I think that there are, just like bullying, that's exactly what it's a form of. And it's filled with misinformation. People who are perpetuating really bad information and myths and destructive messaging around how to hurt yourself. And so we do a lot of education and outreach here at Sheena's Place about the risks with people, young women especially, visiting those sites.
Even though there are obstacles to recovering, Debbie says it's possible even when there are misconceptions surrounding the disease.
No one asks for an eating disorder. It is not a diet gone bad. It is not an exercise in vanity. It usually is a developed coping mechanism or a strategy to manage difficult emotions like depression and anxiety. At Sheena's Place, when I'm talking to people, I talk about how an eating disorder can go into remission. Risks of relapse are high during periods of stress and significant transition. But I've worked with many people who no longer exhibit symptoms and haven't for many years.
It's clear that there isn't an easy answer to know how people get eating disorders. Studies suggest it's from psychological issues, perfectionist personality traits, learned behavior, and some could have a biochemical imbalance. But recovery is possible. Stephanie never thought she would not struggle with her eating, but it took time and healthy coping mechanisms.
Now here I am at 20 years old, not really struggling with all the issues that I had in the past when it came to my eating. Eat a solid 3 meals a day. I never pass out from not eating. Don't really pay attention to calories at all, which is honestly something I never ever thought that I was going to be able to say because I had been struggling with it for over a decade. It just seemed like it was going to be something that was permanent. It was never going to go away. Felt like I was chasing after something that I would never be able to catch. I would never have the body I wanted. I would never be able to eat freely. But here I am. Throughout the entire time that I was struggling with these eating disorders, there was one thing that I'd always fall back on, which was my running. It just felt like when everything was crowding in on me and I felt suffocated and like I couldn't breathe, I just burst out of it all and just go for a run. Anytime I'm facing any old issues from my eating disorder, I can go for a run. And it won't solve all my problems, but in that moment, everything will be okay and I'm just free.
It's clear we live in a culture where people are encouraged to base their self-worth on how they look.
People can see themselves as a less valuable person if they don't fit cultural norms. It's important to remember that it's impossible to reach perfection, so celebrate who you are. For RSJ Radio, I'm Nikki Ashemian.
That wraps up today's edition of the 306.
For RSJ Radio, I'm Vanessa Rogers.
And I'm Sydney Brazil. Have a good rest of your week.